Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in to the SOM TV podcast, our first of the new year, 2021. And I'm happy to say all the problems of 2020 are gone. They're all gone. There's no COVID, no problems with politics. I'm pretty sure all the wars in the world have pretty much come to an end. So everything's good. I don't want to look back on 2020 very much because this was a painful year, but there's a lot we can learn. And honestly, it wasn't all terrible. On this podcast today, I have our editorial director and one of the lead producers for SOM TV, Nadine Netman. Nadine, how are you?
I am doing great. How are you doing?
I'm not drunk enough.
give it time.
Yeah, wow, exactly. So Nadine, she produces all of the podcasts. If you listen to any of our podcasts, this one included, any of the upcoming podcasts we have coming in 2021, your daily cocktail or your weekly cocktail with Sabato Segaria, the hidden history of Napa with Jonah Beer, the history of wine with Matthew Kaner, and then, of course, new episodes with Shakira Jones, Glass for Every Palate, and Jill Zamorski with Reading and Drinking. We have so much coming. Nadine is the person behind all of that.
Yes, podcast is now my middle name. I've accepted
it. That's right. But she's also our on-set producer for quite a bit of our filming. And so when we do film, we get to drink. We drink a lot of very, very good wine. And it's associated with stories. So every time we find a good story, there's often a bottle associated. So what we thought we would do today is talk about our top five wines while we filmed for 2020. This is going to involve some wines for upcoming projects. So I suppose if you're crazy about spoilers, tune out. But I don't think these are really going to spoil much.
We've teased everything that already yeah. that we...
Yeah, if you listen to the podcast, we're not spoiling anything. If I do want to say, though, welcome to all of the many, many, many new SOM TV subscribers. I'm blown away by how many people got SOM TV for Christmas and Hanukkah. And it means the world to watch this little crazy idea we had spread and our team grow. And we couldn't do it without you guys. So thank you so, so much. If you don't have SOM TV, SOMTV.com, we're going to keep the price low as long as we can. It's $49.99 for the entire year. And I promise you, 2021 is the year to get it. So, Nadine, how
lots
do we...
Lots of feature films coming, too, on SOM TV.
Yeah, cool. I know. I have lots of gray hair because of them. So we're going to talk about our top five wines you and I drank during filming, because you and I were in a position where you were there for most of what I filmed. You weren't on the Argentina trip, which was somehow I made it out of the country this year. I don't even know how that's possible.
Barely. You guys flew back and the world shut down, so.
That's right. Yeah.
I know. If we had left you there, that would have been interesting, though.
I wish it would have been great. My family is very sick of me. They'd love for me to go to Argentina right now. All right, so let's talk about this. How do we select our top fives? Just let's lay some ground rules. So is this the best wine? Is this the most expensive wine? Like, what is this?
I would say, well, one, it's definitely wine we tasted or consumed while filming that is on the filming, like not things we just consumed in our daily lives or personal life, but something that we were on set filming.
Yes.
And I would say it doesn't have to be the most expensive, but it should have a story with it. Whether it's like the moment that we consumed it or who we were with or the circumstances, but I think that's more significant for sure.
Right. Okay. Well, that's not going to be hard. All right. So do you want to start?
Let me make it harder then.
Yeah, let's make it harder. Do you want to start with your number five? I want to say this is one of the great perks of my job is to be able to try these wines. Keep in mind, most of these wines, we don't go to a shop and buy it. They're not sponsored. You know, they come from somebody's cellar or, you know, there's a lot of reasons and ways that these bottles get opened, but it's just not the normal method of what people would think. And we don't obviously do this so we get to drink these wines, but I'll tell you, it's not a bad perk.
No, I mean, my gosh, this year alone, I've gotten to taste wines I just basically had dreamed of, especially some of the older wines. So have a really cool job. Sorry.
Yeah, it's good. No, it's good stuff. So, all right. So let's start with your number five. What was your number five best wine of the year for you?
Okay. And like this list was hard to narrow down, like, cause there's been so many great wines, but for number five, I went with the 2005 Pursued by Bear. It's Kyle MacLachlan's winery. And when we filmed him with Joel McHale on the Drink a Bottle, he brought out his 2005 Pursued by Bear. And then I believe the 2017, we got to taste them side by side and see the differences. And the 2005 for 15 years of waiting had just held up beautifully and just really sang. And it was such a beautiful wine, such a beautiful Cabernet Sauvignon. So I chose that as my number five.
I directed that episode. It was great. I think Kyle who you might know from Twin Peaks. He's been on the podcast as well. He brought this bottle out. It's his first vintage. And he was like, you know, I'm kind of concerned. I don't know if it's going to be any good or blah, 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 blah. And he opened it. And I mean, you could smell it from the opening. The wine was just at the very, very, very beginning of its great drinking time period. That wine could go another 15, 20 years, I bet.
Yeah. And it's always fun to also to try someone's first vintage, like right when they're getting into that aspect of winemaking and the wine world. It's just the door is opening right there. And I love that, to be able to taste that first one.
Yeah, that was great. And it's also, I think it's cool that you put a Washington wine on here. That's, you know, Washington is one of those places that a lot of people know as kind of not a secret, but a place you can go to get an amazing price to value over a place like Napa or, you know, Left Bank Bordeaux. And this wine drank incredibly well. It was, I don't blame you for putting this on your list. It's not on mine, but I think the reason is because I was on that one trip to Argentina, which brings me to my number five, was I have to say, this is a grape I have not given any consideration. I've had it before. I've never cared about it. It's always been an inexpensive, really floral, not a grape nor a wine that I have ever pursued. So we went to Argentina in Buenos Aires and we did a blind tasting session with two of the top sommeliers in the country. And one of them opened up a 1992 Torrontés by Eckhart. And this wine, first of all, if you've had Torrontés, I mean, I think you either love it or hate it, but it's a very floral, dare I say, almost a simple wine. This was a 92 that was kept in tank until it was bottled, I believe, a couple years ago. So they bottle it little batches. And it's kind of legendary in Argentina from this one producer. And he brought this bottle, and you can see it on our – we put together a top 40 wines from our staff list. You can see a picture of this bottle, or you can watch it in the blind tasting sessions. This was – it blew me away. The acid in it was fantastic. It had so much character. And you know what I realized when drinking this wine is that I don't know shit about Torrontés. And how dare I say it's a simple wine because I don't know what the F I'm talking about. And this is my favorite thing about being in the wine world. The minute you have some pretension or some preconceived thing that you think you know, something comes up and slaps you in the face and goes, hey, moron, you're a baby. You don't know anything. And wine is just such a humbling experience. This 92 Torrontés, if you told me I was going to drink a 92 white wine from the Torrontés grape, I would have said it must be terrible. This wine was fantastic. That's my number five.
That's fantastic. I love those moments when a wine can change your mind or change how you view something in the wine world. So that definitely was at Torrontés. Was it still very floral?
I would say it would have, yes, but not nearly as much as some are. I think it had some skin contact too, but way back, you know, during maceration. So it had a different, it was different. It had like more of a tannic kind of a full bodied structure. And so it had more of that than it did the floral components, which, you know, I'm used to in Torrontés. Now I don't drink a ton of it. So, but yeah, it was floral, but it was aged. And so everything's very tertiary and kind of melded together. And it was really stupendous. I thought it was excellent. I don't know what the hell to compare it to. I've had some very old Gewürztraminers, very dry old Gewürztraminers that I think are similar, but not as interesting, though I do like those are fine too. But, you know, anyways, that's the best way I can describe it. It was a one-of-a-kind wine. I just had never had anything like it.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love that. I love that you went there and had something very, very different. And it changed your mind on Torrontés. So there we go. So now I know what I'm getting you for your birthday.
Yeah, I can only drink 92 Torrontés for this one producer.
I'm going to get you 2017. Sorry.
All right. So what is your number four wine of the year?
So my number four is actually a wine that Jean Arnold Sessions brought to filming. I absolutely adore Jean. It was wonderful to work with her. And
who is Jean Arnold?
Jean Arnold Sessions is basically a legend in the wine world. She worked at Hanzel for a very long time. She's the wife of winemaker Bob Sessions, but she's like a legend in her own right. And she's just this fantastic, fantastic person with this great history of knowledge and winemaking. And we were filming with her for the Verticals episode on Mayacamas. And she brought some wines along. And she said, you know, I've been saving these for a special day. And I feel like today's a special day. I would like to open this wine with you. And it was a 1968 Late Harvest Zinfandel from Mayacamas. Now, this to me was amazing for two reasons. One, this wine was fantastic. Like, still so beautiful, drank so well. was such an honor to have it in the glass. But also, too, it's because we're doing this Judgment of Paris movie, and Patricia Gastad Gallagher had gone to Mayakamas and tasted the 1968 Late Harvest Zinfandel, and it made her choose Mayakamas as one of the wines for the Judgment of Paris. So here I am sitting with Jean Arnold Sessions and Bernard Portet and the team drinking this 1968 Late Harvest Zinfandel. It was just like a wonderful moment, both in my career and just in my wine tasting journey. I loved it.
Yeah, it was amazing. This almost made my list. And I don't know why I didn't put it on. This was a mind-boggling wine. It was in just such incredible shape. You will see this in our upcoming feature on The Judgment of Paris. And that's why we opened it. But holy smokes, was this good. You're not kidding. What an incredible experience, honestly.
Such a moment, especially with when you open a wine, you know, from, say, 68, as we did, that it can sing out of the glass like that and just kind of, well, basically blow your mind. It just really just brings it home. It was lovely.
It was a half bottle, by the way.
Yeah, it was a half bottle.
In insanity. I mean, that was really, truly incredible stuff. So, all right. Well, that was, it wasn't sweet the way you'd expect. It was, you know, all these old wines, the sugar sort of mellows out. And like, you know, like I said, with the tertiary kind of quality where everything sort of goes together. That wine was, hey, look, this has been the year of Zinfandel for me.
I have several Zinfandels on my list, actually.
I have a Zin on my list. And I think that, I have two Zinfandels on my list.
Zinfandels on my list as well. I would say we might have the same, but you didn't have this one on your list.
So my number four wine is a Zinfandel. It is a 1936 Zinfandel from Martinelli Vineyards from this one little hill called Jackass Hill.
Yes, I have this wine on my list too, but this is my number two wine. But go ahead, keep going.
This is your number two. Okay, this is my number four. This is one of the oldest, I think it might be the oldest still Sonoma wine I've ever had. We have a Verticals episode coming up on this family, Martinelli's, which in the mid-1800s came, like a lot of other Italian immigrants, to this part of California. They went around the bottom of South America and came into Sonoma and became farmers. And this Verticals is really, really, really special. It's going to be one of the season two episodes that we cannot wait to show you. This bottle was insane. I mean, if I hadn't seen it with my own eyes, I'd have been like, this is a fraud. We went down in this little cellar where there are bottles that are dusty and, you know, there's dead mice and it's just a wild looking place. It's below a house that was built in the mid-1800s. That's sort of surrounded by woods. And they didn't even know what the hell. I mean, they sort of said, there are bottles down there. We can open one, but we have no idea what you're going to get. And they've only done it one other time ever, open bottles from this collection that's their grandfather's and great-grandfather's back from, you know, they used to bootleg wine during Prohibition. And it was Robert Parker, I think, in the 80s. And they opened up some white wine from this shelf. And so we're the only other people that got to do this. Well, it was a Magnum. And it was, this wine was in perfect shape. I probably should have had this higher on my list. It was in perfect shape. It was amazing to sit there with the crew and with the family and drink this bottle. Incredible.
And that's the thing. This wine has been waiting, you know, almost 100 years, or not quite. Math is
90 years, yeah.
It's been waiting 90 years to be open, and my goodness, like, the flavor was fantastic. It jumped out of the glass. It had so many great notes to it. And, I mean, they even had to get a hammer to, like, pull out the planks to even get this bottle out of the wall. It was quite a fascinating thing. We've all got it on camera. But the way this wine just sung, and the family, Tessa, the daughter, was like, why have we not done this before? We need to do this more often. And it was great because then took that bottle to their dinner that night and shared it with the whole family.
Yeah, these are the kind of moments that on my deathbed, I will look back and go, oh my, you'll just chase these kind of experiences forever.
Yeah. I was sitting there like on this little barrel, everything's covered in dust, there's spider webs, and there was actually a dead rat as well.
Yeah, that'll be in the episode too. All right. So that was my number four. What is now we're on your number three.
My number three. So I am going back to Mayakamas on this one. This was the 1970 Mayakamas. It was opened for the Verticals episode of Mayakamas that's coming next month, I believe. And it was phenomenal. Jean Arnold?
This is, just to let you know, this is my number two wine on my list.
Oh, nice. Good choice. You have good taste. Jean Arnold Sessions opened this one for the episode. But what is really, really special is we told her we wanted her to open a bottle and we didn't tell her what bottle. And Bob Sessions, her husband, her late husband, is known for this 1970 vintage. So we got a bottle of the 1970 vintage and basically surprised her with it. She said, wait, what is this? We're like, the 1970. She went, ah. And as she opened it, I mean, I don't want to be a spoiler alert for like the verticals or anything, but there were, she was trying very hard not to cry. And it was an absolutely beautiful moment. I just think the emotions surrounding that moment really got to me. And that's one reason why I love this wine so much. But number two, this wine was phenomenal. 50 years waiting, and it was fantastic. I think probably the best cab that I have had.
Yeah, I would go. I think it's tough not to speak in hyperbole, but I would also agree with you. I think, so, you know, talk about a humble brag here. We were in a two-day period. We drank the 68 Maya Camus Late Harvest Zinfandel, the 70 Maya Camus, the 71 Maya Camus that was the Judgment of Paris vintage. So we drank all three of those. And you talk about a sensory overload. And I'll be honest, the 70 is better than the 71. And I wonder if that 1970 was in the Judgment of Paris competition, if Maya Camus wouldn't have won.
That's a very interesting point.
I'm not joking. It was that effing good. It was one of, I'm struggling to say it was the best Napa cab I've ever had. I think it was. I would say, if you ask me right now, what's the best Napa cab you've ever had in your life? It's the 1970 Maya Camus.
And the thing is, this 70 and the 71 had both never left the winery until we opened them. They had been at the Domaine this entire time. So stored perfectly, stored exactly the same. But the 70, yeah.
The 71 was a little more austere. It had, I think from what I gather, that year was a little cooler. And when you're talking about that kind of age, you know, it helps to have a little bit more fruit to hang in there. And I, you know, there was less fruit in the 71. It was all completely drinkable, but the 70 was on a plateau. It was, the fruit was there, the acid was there, the color was fantastic. The thing was like in fantastic shape. And even the next day, the glass that came out of it was phenomenal. So
yeah, it just lasted.
Yeah, that wine I could talk about, but you're going to see it, like she said, in the Verticals Maya Camus episode, which is, oh boy, one of the best.
Which is going to air next month in February. So this is going to be great. Oh,
Jesus, we have a lot of work to do.
We do. All right, so that was my number three, which was your number two. And then my number two was your number three. So now we're down to number one.
I have a number three. No, I still have my number three.
A different one?
Yeah, so because my number two was the Maya Camus.
Oh, got it. Go on.
So my number three, and this is, you know, we've been very lucky, so I'm not trying to be a bragger here. But so when we did the Clos de Vaux Verticals episode, which is, again, coming in season two, one of the bottles opened in is a 1953 Hospice de Beaune Courtin. And it is a red. Courtin is one of the few places that can have red and white Grand Cru. And this is, it was incredible. I mean, it was the gentleman, Olaf Gallet, which is the family that owns Clos de Vaux and always has. Their roots go back very, very far in France, and they were importers and all sorts of stuff. And so this wine was a wine that's associated with their family. And so he opened it, and he kind of had like this, I don't know if it's going to be any good or blah, blah, blah. And he opened it, he goes, it's okay. And he handed me the glass, and I like my eyeball fell out of my head. I had to like pick it up off the carpet.
It was kind of gross. We have that on camera too.
It was outrageous. This wine was incredible. If anyone else listening to this has had, I've just been very lucky because of these movies to have a lot of old Burgundy. It's not, I don't have the money to drink this kind of stuff. I want to be very honest with everybody listening. It's just because of the filming, but holy smokes. It has this, like, you get about 4 minutes of a little funky stuff that kind of blows off. And then below that, pure acid and fruit in a way that's like it gasped for air for about 4 or 5 minutes and then became perfect.
Yeah, and lasted for a while too, because we had it open for a while and it kept singing, but wow. That wine was fantastic.
I think we had about an hour and a half of that wine before it started to take a dive. You know, a lot of those old Burgundies, I found this with Jancis Robinson's Amarose and Somme 3 in Paris. These Burgundies, they tend to take a deep dive after anywhere from 20 minutes to 2 hours. I don't know why. A lot of the cabs must be just the fact there's a lot more tannin or something like that.
I think they just like save that final breath of life. And they're like, here I am. Okay, yeah,
then they jump off a cliff and take my eyeball with them. All right, so the 1953 Hospice de Beaune that is opened up in the Clos de Vaux Verticals.
That was fantastic. I loved that wine so much that I actually saved the bottle instead of it being thrown out, and I have it on my shelf of special empty bottles. Yeah,
yeah. Most of these I did save as well when they let us. All right, what is your number one, Nadine?
Okay, so I have a sneaking suspicion we have the same number one because we both tasted this amazing, phenomenal wine, and neither of us have mentioned it yet. So My number one, and probably my number one for many, many years, is this 1824 Madeira.
Also my number one.
Yep. This was part of a Drink a Bottle episode at Clos de Vaux with Olaf Golet and Ted Henry, the winemaker. This wine, almost 200 years of waiting, and was recorked just prior to Prohibition, even says it in the label, in 1919, so that they could, you know, bootleg it, was phenomenal. Caramel notes were jumping out of the glass. It was just a prize. And I mean, there was, you know, five or six of us splitting this bottle. I treasured every single drop. And I, you know, I must say, I'm fascinated by old wines. I love the history that's old wines. I love the journey that they've been on. I love, you know, what has happened from the moment that they were, you know, made into wine, and then their journey, how they got here, and everyone involved with it. And this wine for 200 years, or just under 200 years, had been sitting there waiting, and I got to be there when it was opened. And I feel like the whole story is open when you pull out that cork. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I want to echo that and put punctuation on it. I think that when you think about Madeira, and if anybody, look, Madeira is a wine of a different time in a lot of ways. It was a wine that was created, and a lot of ways it was created, accidents and on purpose. It's heated. It's built to withstand ship voyages. And there was a lot of time during the War of 1812 and the Revolutionary War in America where we couldn't get a lot of alcohol because the British were blockading us. But what we could get was Madeira from the island of Madeira, which is sort of, you know, it's in the Atlantic, almost to Africa. And it was built to survive these hot holds of ships. So at the time, this would have been a very, very important wine. I mean, you're talking, this was, you know, a decade out from the War of 1812, which actually lasted farther than 1812. And this would have been a decade out. I mean, that's how old this is. We are talking about, you know, many of the states we have in the United States were not states. They were territories or belonged to Russia in the case of Alaska. And I just, you think about, like you said, the journey these things go on. Well, this particular bottle smacked right into American history because they imported it. And like you said, they recorked it in 1919 strategically. It's not because they were worried about the cork. It's because if it was recorked right before 1919, they were able to bring it into the country and sneak it in during, as Prohibition was looming. And so it was this really interesting history of America and Europe smashing in. Now, when we drank the wine, all of that stuff, you can take all the history, you can think about how many hands it passed through, and only Madeira, with its almost bulletproof shield, can survive going to different cellars, ending up in different houses, being manhandled, going up and down in temperature. This particular bottle was like roasted, toasted hazelnuts. And Madeira is an interesting thing because it's already oxidized. And so as wine ages, of course, it oxidizes. Well, Madeira just gets better and better and better.
Isn't Madeira like the one wine you can't kill because it's already
dead? It's really hard. The only way to kill it is just open the top and let it evaporate. Because, you know, it's one of these wines that obviously if you put it in your fridge or something like that, it's going to be better, fresher. But it is a wine that if you were to drink it, it's a very difficult wine to kill, as you said, especially well-made Madeira. And I'm not talking like something cheap, but like the real vintage Madeira is very special and it's bone dry in a lot of cases. There are some very, very dry Madeiras. This was transcendental. It was one of the most incredible bottles of wine I've ever tasted, ever, ever, same, ever. It ranks up there with the 69 Chave Hermitage that I had in Somm 2. I will chase it forever. And now I am out on the hunt for Madeira.
Yeah.
I have to direct a whole film on Madeira just to drink more of this stuff, I will.
That can be arranged. No, this will be at the top of my list for a very, very long time. The oldest wine I had before this was 1936, and this just blew it out of the water by more than 100 years. I feel like that milestone has now been hit, and I don't know if I'll ever surpass it with this wine. So I just absolutely loved it.
There are a couple of Rieslings in Germany that I know of in a cellar from the 1700s that I'm going to get my little paws on for Somm TV. But maybe we'll see how that works. Yeah, no, for sure. You know, so, okay. Obviously, that's a fortified wine, but it's a wine nonetheless. And so that was pretty special. Also, man, I'm trying to think, you're right. 18, God, that is just so old for this wine to still be. I'm telling you, anybody listening, you'd have drank this wine, you'd have gone, this is an incredible, incredible fortified wine. You wouldn't even have thought about the fact that it's 200 years old.
And it was fun drinking in the group because we were all so excited about it. Like, we were drinking it with Ted Henry at Clos de Vaux, and he was just like, wow. Like, he was not going to say freaking out about the wine, but we were all freaking out about
the
wine.
No, he was. We were all freaking out. All right, so you have a couple honorable mentions or just a few more
we want to talk about? I do, just because it was really hard to narrow it down to the top five. And so this next one, this honorable mention, is kind of like, I would say, both the wine and the experience. So this is the 1979 Spring Mountain Cabernet Sauvignon. This wine means so much to me now for two reasons. One, we filmed at Spring Mountain 48 hours before many of the properties on the land burned. And we had this wine as part of a filming. It was phenomenal. Just what a delightful wine. And, you know, 79, been waiting 41 years, and it was fantastic. Loved every drop. So it was very special then. But then when we went back after the fires, we went into Chateau Chevalier, which was one of the ghost wineries that did not burn that day. And we went into it on the second floor at dusk with Keith Baker, who's the director of sales and the winery historian. And we sat and recorded a podcast at dusk in this, you know, this supposedly haunted ghost winery while drinking the 1979 Spring Mountain Cabernet. So I've had it twice. And wow, I mean, fantastic, but also just the stories that went along with it. I mean, we're literally sitting in this ghost winery. There are bats flying around. There's no electricity. And we're drinking this wine. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and you can listen to that podcast titled Ghost Winery on this podcast. So I also, that wine was amazing. We had the opportunity to have that twice during the course of this whole thing, which was pretty remarkable. That is, I think, one of the legendary wines of Napa, the 79 Spring Mountain. All right. I have to mention the 71 Maya Camus, which was the Judgment of Paris wine. Just to be able to drink that wine was incredible. The wine was actually excellent. It just, the only problem is I had the 70, and the 70 was incredible. I mean, I think the 71 would have been on my list, no question, had I not had that 70.
Didn't have them on the same day either. It was just that
right. It
just held up. Yeah.
Yeah, the 70 was, I mean, I can't. It was just so good. I also have to just call out another Zinfandel, a 96 Frog's Leap Zinfandel that Jonah Beer drank with Dylan Proctor for our Drink a Bottle series.
This was so good.
A cool vintage Zin. It was about 12% alcohol. It was just elegant and completely different than anything you would think of in a Zinfandel. My eyes were completely open to Zinfandel this year. I've always really liked the Ridge Zinfandels and Turley and these things, especially with age. But you know, they were always big wines. You know, you'd have them at Christmas or something like that, or with barbecue. But now I'm starting to think about it in a whole new light. I'm starting to think these wines have finesse and they have character that I wasn't, you know, I don't think I gave them the chance to have. And so, yeah. So those would be my honorable mentions.
Yeah, no, I did love that Frog's Leap. That was great. I have one more on my honorable mention. It's the 1970 Heights, which was one of the wines of the Judgment of Paris.
Oh, yeah. This could be one of the best cabs I've ever had in my life, too.
Oh, my gosh. This wine was fantastic. And I remember I got to sip it while we were actually filming, and I couldn't say anything because we were still filming. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, this is just...
I remember. I saw you peed your pants. I remember that.
Well, it was right after you dropped your eyeball, so it was a little weird.
Yes. I think that particular wine was perfect. It was so perfect, I couldn't believe it. But also, you know, you're sitting there hearing stories from a vineyard manager talking about Joe Heights. He had a reputation for being a very strong personality. And he'd lose his temper and all these things, but he also was a mad genius. The guy was a really, really talented winemaker, obviously. And that wine was phenomenal. It was a Judgment of Paris wine. You know, it's just so incredibly lucky for us to try these wines. I can't believe it.
Yeah, I mean, and that was great talking with a vineyard manager whose family had been working with that vineyard since it began. So it was kind of cool to get that history from the inception of it. But yeah, these Judgment of Paris wines, I mean, I'm so excited about our documentary coming. It's been a passion project all last year, and now this year it's actually coming out. And the wines in it and the people in it, and it's just a really delightful story. And it was such an honor to be able to get to tell it.
Yeah. Our entire staff and cast and everybody put together a list of the 40 best wines of the year. So if you go to somtv.com/2020wines, you can read our entire list. So it's the top 40 wines from our entire cast and crew. Some of the wines we talked about are obviously on that list from Nadine and I. You should read that. You should subscribe to SomTV. And I want to say, we wish everybody here a very happy and a very safe new year. I cannot wait to show you what we're working on. And I can't wait to see what you guys are working on. Please, 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 I can't wait to see you back in the restaurants. I miss your faces. I miss drinking with you.
You're going to buy everyone a beer too, right?
I mean, sure, yeah. I mean, yeah, in person, it sounds a lot cheaper than just buying everyone listening a beer. But keep listening, and please, also, let us know your feedback. We're on all the social media you are. We're on Twitter, we're on Instagram. and we want to hear from you. Nadine, be safe, okay?
I will do my best, Jason. Keep it real.
Bye, everybody. Be safe.